We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Mike. And just as is every weekend recently, the biggest weekend of the year for the Lakers coming up, with the biggest game of the year tonight against the Dallas Mavericks. Mike, they are a game ahead of us in the standings. I believe even if we win tonight, they have the tiebreaker against us, because it'll be 2-2, but they'll have the better conference record. And so that means if we lose tonight, we're down two games in the standings and lose the tiebreaker, which basically means we'd be down three games. And that is very difficult to make up that amount of real estate in the last 11 games. So big weekend, Mike, but it's been a couple shows since you've been on, man. How was the road trip? What were your impressions from it? It was kind of a roller coaster, as it always is around these parts.
Yeah, it was. I think it went about as expected. Honestly, I think that you and I and Darius certainly have discussed some of these things, and I listened to both of the podcasts, longtime listener. Always enjoyed listening to you guys. And I think what I was trying to convey on text, and it's always a little bit harder, but there's a certain feel that you get, you know, when you're there on the road, and even a little bit more so at home, because you just can kind of sense the energy on the bus and at the hotel and at the arena. And I think that ultimately the energy coming out of the game in Houston, albeit a loss, was still good, in that, like, this is a group of guys, and we've talked about this on the broadcast a few times, but the players that are over 30 are now LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis having just turned 30. And so AD didn't play in the game in Houston, of course. That's the main reason why they lost. LeBron was also not in the locker room after the game, because, you know, it's not like he had to get ready and shower. So it was just all the young guys essentially in the locker room. And they're all feeling pretty good. And not like they didn't want to lose that game, but I think there's an excitement to the team. There's like an excitement to what's ahead of them. I think they like playing together, and they were able to just sort of shake off that game. And I think that what would have been better had they approached that game thinking, we don't have Anthony Davis, we have to play differently. And I think they kind of had the same approach that they did against New Orleans, which was, hey, everything's great, let's go. And then AD's the one that really created all of the slotting and the matchup problems and the way that New Orleans had to play and prevented anything from getting into the paint. So that to me is what happened. It is how the NBA works. I think a lot of times you have to sort of acknowledge that there are now just so few games left that's the kind of lack of understanding of the moment that isn't great. Yeah. But it's like, while given the guys that are there and given all of the newness and the lack of size, it's like I sort of just understood that the game went like that. So take all that and then add. I think we already covered the New Orleans win fine, but. Anthony Davis now coming back. And this is a Dallas team, Pete, without Luka Doncic. And that's the main thing. And that, just like with the Lakers in Houston, changes everything. Except that if Kyrie does play, then they at least have kind of a number one type of player. I don't think he's good enough to be a number one, but at least a guy that you can run things through and that can get hot and that the rest of the defense has to pay a certain amount of attention to. So I do think that that's in play. But all of this lines up well for the Lakers to come in having not had a collective great effort and not having AD, now coming home and really understanding the desperation of the moment because of not just that loss, but the loss against the Knicks, where, you know, you should really see a pretty serious effort from the start. And if that's the case, then they're simply a better team than Dallas. They're playing better. And by the way, they're playing better than what Dallas has been playing with Luka lately. Dallas has been struggling since they got Kyrie. So it's a game that I think, like, it doesn't necessarily erase what happened in Houston, but this win is more important and it does line them back on that course, which to me still most likely looks to be that 7-8 range. I know that you've been discussing and we've been discussing, they still should be kind of trying to chase for that 5-6 spot, but I think that the two, like the Knicks loss and the Rockets loss combined with both Golden State and the Clippers playing better lately has shifted those odds some, if there were going to be any. But the 7-8 spot could still be a fruitful place for the Lakers to make a real run. And that, of course, starts by having to take care of business against Dallas.
That's the dissonance that I have, Mike, between the, like, I'm glad that they weren't in the locker room in the Houston game, like, despondent and had their spirits broken or anything like that. But I mean, we can all read the standings, and with no disrespect to Sacramento or Memphis in the 2 and 3 spots, like, if you can get to the 6 or 7 seed, you've got winnable series, right? From at least in that first round series. And we'll see if the Clippers or Golden State, you know, win their first round. That's actually a side note, that 4-5, whoever it is, somebody between KD and Booker's Suns, Steph's Warriors, and the Clippers, somebody's going home in the first round. So I'm very curious to see what that 4-5 ends up being, Mike. But that's the thing, is like, they say opportunity knocks. I don't necessarily agree with that phrasing, because usually you have to go pursue opportunity. You got to go get it. And I agree with you. If we were going to get into that top six, you can't have a loss like the game to Houston. But is this when we see that sense of urgency start to kick in with the team? Because that's something that you have a better feel for than anybody I know. And so that Houston game, I'm like, guys, you know where we are in the standings,
yeah,
right?
I don't think it was just urgency. I think the sense of urgency for the Lakers has basically been there for a month plus. And certainly relative to the rest of the NBA. They for the most part, with a couple of games accepted, have played consistently hard. And have brought consistent energy and effort. And so this is kind of what my refrain from the last several weeks has been, sort of like, you really, not you, but the royal you, like, you cannot expect, no matter what the circumstances, that a team is every single night going to have better energy than the other team. And I know that you don't, but by sort of just expecting that they're, well, hold on, don't you guys look at the standings, see where you are. If you don't beat Houston, it wasn't just about energy and execution. And like, they did not have a lot of talent relative to matching up with the way that Houston, their particular build and their big guards. And like, they could have started better with better energy, and that could have deterred Houston's early rim attacks. And sure, could have, would have, should have, but they also could have not played with as much energy in winning most of their games since the All-Star break on any one of those nights, but they didn't. And we don't go back and sort of second guess those types of games because we expect a certain level of it. And that's all I'm not necessarily, I don't feel like I'm conveying that the best way that I can, but it just seems to me so obvious that some of those times are going to happen and you have to just accept them. Like, and that's what I thought they did a pretty good job of in the locker room after, of like, hold on, this doesn't mean that we suck now and we're going to go back the other way. Like, we still have enough to get these things done.
And that's one of the things that I was mentioning on the pod yesterday. Like, 4 of our 5 starters have only been here for 6 weeks at most. And I don't think they carry the baggage of not just the 2-10 start, but last year, and just kind of this, we've been on this slow, arduous climb, Mike, up the standings and digging ourselves out of a hole for a long time. But they weren't a part of that for most of that. And so that what you're saying about nights like these happen in the NBA is 100% true. It's just that at this point of the season, and especially in a game like that, where if AD is out, does your mentality go, oh crap, we actually have to turn it up today? Maybe the game against Orlando, who we play on Sunday, right? And if we have everybody, maybe that's a game where it's not as, it, you know, even though they can absolutely beat you, you know what I mean? So that's just where I'm coming from, is that there was just a disconnect for me there. But you're absolutely right, Mike, that's kind of how it is.
And the disconnect is because you, having passionately followed every single one of those games and sort of knowing all of the stakes and hearing me bark in your ear since the preseason about, you know, what the standings race was going to look like, you know, all of that stuff. I think there's a certain level of detachment for the locker room that is good from that. And like, so since D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley and Jared Vanderbilt got to the Lakers, Lakers have been pretty good. The fans love them, you know. It's like they're probably all their friends are texting them and, hey man, like, you guys really got something going on. Wow, I saw you. Players that are friends of Vanderbilt's that probably hadn't watched him play this year in Utah are now locked in watching every game. And so there's, but I'll now acknowledge, like, there's a certain amount of that is too frosty, and well, not I meant frosty in the sense of frosting, but like too nice, too sweet. And you don't want it to be, you don't want them to think that, oh, everything's great, we're now in the 9 seed, you know, a game behind that. Because there's clearly a lot more work to do. But I think that the main guys that can drive that are Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And LeBron is out, right? And he's not imminently returning or anything. AD didn't play last game. And he isn't that type of vocal, just everybody get on the back, you know, verbally in the locker room guy. And so you're relying on the coaches to do that. And I think Darvin is pretty good at that, but he's also had that message every day, basically, of this is what we have to bring in terms of energy and effort and conviction. And so it's just, this is where I'm now thinking, like, that you can't say that same message every time. And you don't, like, they're better off not having Patrick Beverley, right? He might be a guy that helps you in a game like that against Houston, but the overall mood and vibe and skill of the team is better off as it is. And that's part of what I'm baking in with AD not playing is, it, unfortunately, where they are in the standings, a loss to Houston. But the overall way that the team has kind of come together, I think is going to be better off for this final stretch of games, even having lost that game.
That's great perspective. And in hearing you in this first segment talk through it, like, it's made me realize that we don't have a ton of leaders in terms of our role players, which that's okay. Like, we got talent, right? But that whole everybody else is under 30. And they're also in different places where, like, we don't have guys who have been Lakers for years or a lot of institutional knowledge in many years. And so a lot of those guys are finding their own way and making their own path. And so it's a new dynamic on a team that, you, like you said, had a Pat Bev, had a bunch of older vets. And we saw the weaknesses of that for a couple of years in some respects that it hadn't occurred to me the leadership aspect of it on this team. So I think you're really spot on with that.
So there's some happy medium there on a roster where you have the continuity and you have the vets and you have the young guys and you have the energy and what the Lakers did in aggregate to reshape the roster was certainly a good thing, but there are still holes in certain aspects of it. And some of them are physical. Some of them are size wise. Some of them are from a leadership perspective. Like, it's not perfect, but it's much better than what it was. And it's led to them winning some of these games. But the last point on this kind of energy shift, and then maybe we can zoom in a little bit more on Dallas. Like, this is when a couple of weeks ago, when we saw the Lakers were like, they were playing well, but I had raised that point and it was almost a question of, I don't think they're going to be able to just keep playing harder than the opponent for all of these games. Like, it's going to come, there are going to be games that come up on the schedule here and that's just a natural evolution of a season. Even if you're like literally going to be eliminated from playoff contention, if there are five games that you have to win, you cannot play the same exact way for all five of those games in terms of getting the whole roster to do it. But what can they do? Like, how can they get close enough, and can you put them in with different lineups and rotations and separating AD from Russell a certain amount, like they stagger them in New Orleans? And do they have enough there to win these games and to keep all of the momentum, or most of the momentum going? And I think yes. So it's sort of like a plea for me to not overanalyze one game too much, but to sort of look at the collection of games, and that's a difficult thing to do. Especially when the only in the NBA, like when there it is just the one game ahead of you that night.
Yeah.
And it's a tough dance to do.
It's funny because there's so many games in the NBA relative to other sports, with the exception of Major League Baseball. And the way baseball plays is in series, right? And so the way that, you know, you'll normally talk about it is, did your team win the series? Did they get 2 out of 3? Did they split a 4-game set or something like that? And that's probably more how I will try in future years to look at an NBA season, kind of the, and you've really taught me a lot about the ebb and flow of that. So let's take a break. And when we come back, let's zero in on the Mavs game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, Mike, both the Mavs and the Suns made huge trades at the deadline with the Brooklyn Nets. And Kyrie, as you said earlier, ends up with Dallas. Both teams end up trading their 3-and-D wings, or their best ones, for an elite type of scorer. And so I've been watching Dallas a little bit recently. But before I start on that, I'm curious what you see out of the new look Mavs, because it's not exactly the same team that we've faced. We've played this version before, but the previous two times, it's a different squad.
Yeah, I don't love what I've seen from the new look Mavs. It's a tough kind of, they had to accept that after they chose not to bring back Brunson, and obviously that doesn't look like a great move in hindsight, even if Brunson wanted to go, you know, they still could have kept him, especially with what that number was. And they could have matched it, or they could have exceeded it. And like, that's, that trick now has turned into having to get Kyrie Irving, but at the expense, you know, of some real players, you know, at the expense of Dorian Finney-Smith in particular, probably their best perimeter defender. And in addition to some compensation, and then not having the guarantee even that Kyrie will stay moving forward. And whereas the energy shift for the players that came in from the Lakers standpoint clearly was one that was kind of excited and positive, you know, Kyrie doesn't come to the team in the same way. Like, he has a very unique style and personality, and he is a great basketball player on the court, but it's not like he's coming into the locker room and like, it's just a different type of an aspect right there. So since he's gotten there, you know, like, their first couple games went well. They beat the Clippers and the Kings, the 8th and the 10th. But then since then, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 losses to 4 wins. And it's basically the opposite of the Lakers situation. And they have some of the issues that the Lakers had in the Houston game specifically, with their big man rotation and not really having one that's optimal. Like, Wood's their best offensive player there, but Kidd doesn't seem to be the biggest fan. They keep his numbers down. They don't seem to trust him in certain situations. He is not doing much on the defensive end. If they start Dwight Powell, he's got some limitations there. If they start Maxi Kleber, he's not really a center. You know, he's a forward who can approximate center in certain small lineups, but only against certain guys. And so that's kind of a mess. Mm-hmm. And then on the perimeter, you know, without Finney-Smith, especially if you have Luka and Kyrie on the court, then that means you only have those other two spots. and which one of those guys is going to be able to defend a forward well enough. So it's just their roster doesn't make a ton of sense. It's kind of like where I thought the Lakers were the previous year and a half when they had Russ next to LeBron and AD. It was going to be hard to find the types of guys that could really do both things, both sides of the ball next to those three players. And so that's kind of how I've seen Dallas. Now, they had lost three in a row. They did beat San Antonio with almost nobody playing. It was basically just, you know, like Christian Wood had to play and got 28 and 13. And, you know, I do like Josh Green to an extent as a player. I don't like him messing with Austin Reeves, as you've seen on my Instagram. But that game goes to OT and San Antonio wasn't playing anybody. So basically, Pete, the bottom line is that they are down right now. They're not confident. I don't think they have a lot of great chemistry going on in the locker room. And again, this is not on Kyrie. It's just like Luka. I think Luka knows that it's not good enough and he's frustrated. Luka thinks closer to like how Kobe or LeBron thinks about winning.
Yeah, agreed.
And you can see it on his face. Like he's pissed if he's losing even a single game. And I like that in him. I like that fire in him, but it doesn't always, when you're the leader, you know, sometimes that has to go in a different direction if you're going to get the best out of teammates. And that's a whole nother part. But basically the Mavs come in here kind of limping, Pete. You know, they're 35 and 35. And it's a real opportunity for the Lakers to swap essentially the spot in the standings and to line up to make the Mavericks feel like you guys are going one direction, the Lakers are going the other. Like that's what tonight's push has to be. And it's got to be not just like a max effort, but just a smart effort. Like give AD the basketball a lot against this team. And if they want to sell out, and Jason Kidd knows AD well, and my guess is he's going to send traps and he's going to send doubles.
Oh yeah.
Then guess what? Like that's what D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley are for. And that's what let me get some more Austin Reeves then. Somebody who can make that play out of a trap and out of a double and get somebody else a good shot. And by the way, if you do want to do that again to AD, then go all the way to the rim, Russell and Reeves, like you did when New Orleans was doing that, and then kick out. So I just think that there are a lot of advantages that the Lakers will have in play here. And if they have a professional, serious effort, Pete, then they could be in good shape in this game.
I think so too. Dallas is a team that kids' defensive schemes will really influence us toward jumpers as much as possible. And they're a team that likes to kind of seal off the paint, meaning that they don't want it to let you get in there in the first place because they don't have anybody that can protect the rim once you're there. And so guys who crowd AD can bother him a little bit. I think that's part of the reason, Mike, why LeBron, that was LeBron's last game and where he hurt his foot, but had that 11-point fourth quarter on a lot of plays where he's just bullying a smaller player, you know? And that to me is going to be the key to the game tonight is, are we able to kind of puncture their defense? That to that point, one of the reasons they were good last year is I thought Kidd got a lot out of individual defensive talent that was like okay, but they've even downgraded that this year as well to a degree where it's like, yeah, he's got a bunch of bad choices defensively, Mike, that he needs that. Like if he tries to take away one thing, it creates a hole somewhere else. And their big dilemma right now is, are we playing one big or two? Which as you said, Kidd is kind of veered away from playing two. It's funny. This has actually been a storyline in a couple of different NBA cities. We've talked about this with Darvin, right? We've talked about, oh, AD at the four. That was a big part of the conversation before the season. Hasn't really played out that way. So anyway, Kidd has been slow to playing like both Wood and Kleba at the same time, or Powell and Wood type of thing. Yeah. But he's done it more the last couple of games. So that said, if they do that, Mike, the reason that coaches don't do that is it's really hard to get out to shooters if you got two bigs on the floor. And so to me, all of that points to they're going to double AD. They're going to try to keep us out of the paint, which means we got to make our jumpers today. And we have way more of the personnel to do that. But I think that that's going to be a big key to the game. With you on Josh Green, though, he's a guy I think that is super important for them to kind of fill in that 3-and-D type of wing. He's gotten a lot better this year. I would suspect you're not the biggest Jaden Hardy fan, but he's gotten some run lately.
Well, I wouldn't say that I have a strong opinion on him yet. He has played so little, but he's the type of player, right? First of all, he's a second round pick, number 37 overall, I think in 2022. he's just sort of a go and get buckets type guy. And I think that's probably what you're referring to. That's not my favorite league archetype, but he can fill it up on a given night. He was 5-for-17 in their last game against San Antonio. That is the kind of game that the Lakers, had they been, let's say that AD plays against Houston, then that's what you expect from Porter and Green. You know, that type of game, like keep them out of the paint, let them take some tough contested jump shots. And if they happen to hit a couple, fine, but it's not really going to hammer away at your defensive structure. And
sure,
you know, and so Dallas is having to play, though. They're having to play some guys that, you know, that have been like Davis Bertans has not had the best couple of seasons. He has to play some minutes off the bench. They're having to play Holiday and JaVale played 4 minutes last game. I mean, they're like their backup point guard at this point was McKinley Wright IV, who I'm guessing a lot of Laker fans haven't heard of and, you know, hasn't necessarily done a ton at this point. So they're grasping a little bit, but I just checked this officially. So Doncic is out, like they on Mavs.com, they ruled him out. And then Kyrie's questionable with that foot soreness. He had some comments, right, where he didn't necessarily say that it was something that was going to go away and that he was necessarily going to play through. So I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play. I mean, Hardaway is still questionable. So there's just a lot going on. And I think like Luka's missing it with the thigh. I'm not going to go there. I was going to draw an analogy to something from a Lakers standpoint, but all I'll say is that Luka, like with the thigh hurting as it is and the team, I don't know that he believes in the team fully, you know, right. And is necessarily going to like treat this like a life or death playoff game and just try to push through that thigh. I think he wants to try to get the thigh healthy. So yeah, it's a situation for the Lakers where how is Dallas going to have personnel on the court to create efficient offense with Anthony Davis out there and then still somehow hang in there defensively? And I don't think they have the personnel to do it. So it's sort of a control your own destiny game in that sense for the Lakers. And this is part of what Darvin Ham's been good at this year is we play how we want to play. And this team's not going to be able to match it as opposed to if we don't shift to what they're doing, then it's going to be trouble.
That's spot on. But that's a fairly rosy outlook on tonight's game, Mike. Is there anything that stands out to you about how they might challenge us?
Rosy outlook on it.
I love hearing that.
No, I mean, so how they could challenge, I mean, if they went sort of to the all offense mode and like actually started Christian Wood and played him more and tried to pull AD out, you know, and he just shot a bunch of threes, but I don't think they're going to do that. Like Kidd doesn't like to do that. I think they're going to them starting the traditional like roll to the rim center in Dwight Powell. And he played 29 minutes last game. Great. That's great. AD can just hang out then in the paint and help on other guys. And so that specific part of the attack doesn't seem to bring that much danger. If Kyrie does play, Pete, he's clearly good enough to just go on a heater from the perimeter. And especially against, like, if it's Russell and Beasley who are going to start, and they will, you know, that's not great from a matchup perspective as opposed to having, you know, Dennis Schroeder out there harassing and chasing. And so that would be, to me, their way of having a chance to do it a little better. You know, if Kyrie does, in fact, play, he gets hot. And then the Lakers have to overcompensate there. And all of a sudden, Reggie Bullock's getting a ton of open threes and that kind of thing. And Green on the other side.
I think you're spot on with that. And I think on the other end of the floor, it's going to be a matter of, you know, sometimes you miss your open jump shots. And if we shoot jumpers as we did in Houston, although, like you said, AD not being there took away so much of the gravity that got guys open. We didn't get a great looks, I thought, in Houston. But I do think that this is going to be a jump shooting game. And that's very much the type of coach that Jason Kidd is. Then on Sunday, we got a Orlando team that is not a good team, but is not a team that you can look past. One of the taller teams in the league, Mike, we got a win with a very different roster against them earlier in the year in their building. What do you see from the upcoming Orlando matchup?
Yeah, that one's almost to me a little trickier than Dallas, just in that like the Lakers played pretty well in Orlando, but totally different team at the time. And that was I think Paolo Banchero's I can't believe I'm on the court with LeBron game, and he was just all over the place and he couldn't hit a shot and he just turned the ball over and it was just like, whoa, this is kind of, he was shook by that moment, and I don't think he will be again. And Orlando is big and they've got some talent. Like, they've got some rugged, athletic, strong guards, which I think that are, if you just look at the Houston game, Pete, there are some corollaries there where the Lakers struggled some. And this is the part where I worry about, take AD out of it, because I think he'll be fine and he'll be prepped for it. But I worry about the rest of the team kind of looking at, oh, Orlando's coming in terms of Russell and Beasley and Vanderbilt. And, oh, Orlando, no problem. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you've got Suggs just like slapping the ball out of your hands and sprinting the other way.
Right.
And, you know, Markelle Fultz just being physical. So that game to me is more of a trap game than the Dallas game, where clearly the Lakers are going to be up for it and sort of know what's going on. And so that's my initial thought on that.
Yeah, no, and that's something that it's that pulls me back to where I was at the beginning of the pod, Mike, of like, it's too late in the season for that. If it's game 30 something or something like that, but like these games count in ways that are really going to impact our immediate future. And Mike, the opportunity's there. I guess that's like, the West is historically bad this year, and we needed things to break a certain way in order for us to have a talented team that has a shot if we get to a 7-game type of series. And it did. The Western Conference absolutely has broken that way. And so there's a certain sense of like, I want to jump up and down and be like, you guys, it's there. And if we were in the Eastern Conference, I would not feel this optimistic, right? I'd feel like, oh man, we'd have to get through an absolute gauntlet to get to the finals. I don't see that out West, Mike. And so that why to me is like, we've got this opportunity, man. Let's really cherish the moment every day, where hearing you say that and knowing how often you're right about things like that on the Sunday game, it's just nails on a chalkboard to me, even though I know there's a lot of truth in it.
Well, so first of all, with the East versus the West, and just to underscore your point, this it's basically the difference between what Sacramento and Memphis are doing right now versus what the Celtics and 76ers are. And that's because as it continues to look, the Lakers probably have the best chance to get into that 7-8. And I think depending on who they play, but LeBron comes back, you know, they can win one game, you know, to get to get to the 7 spot, which would match up against the 2. And we don't even need to worry about all that yet. I think your point is fair. And thinking, hold on, isn't this super obvious? And that's what I'm trying to relay is that in the locker room, it isn't always that obvious, right?
Right.
Because there are a lot of different things that these guys are thinking about. And some are really good about thinking about their matchup on a given night. You know, some are good about looking at the big picture. But the message, because when you start in the hole that the Lakers started in, there's been this urgency there, even with all the guys that have been in and out. There's been this level of urgency like all year. And and certainly since the All-Star break. And it's just like when you hear, just think about a kid in school and you hear the teacher saying the same thing, like, hey, kids, pay attention. And they're having to do it every day. Even if the circumstances are obvious, it's just there's some human nature element there. And that's why you need the talent, you know, in the NBA. That's right, why you have to have the talent in the fit. And that's why the coach has to organize the players in the right ways, because you cannot take for granted that mentally a team is going to completely understand its situation. On top of the fact that a lot of the opponents are going to be playing in the Western Conference, most of the Western Conference after the Magic and the Bulls are out of the way, a lot of those teams are going to have some similar level of either desperation or just, you know, care about where they end up in the seeding race of things.
I guess it's more like, so I get your point, the pay attention, lock in, all that. That's a big part of a coach's struggles in a 82 game season. That's going to, you know, wax and wane. I totally get that. I think the point that I'm trying to make is a little bit different in that, like, earlier in the year, it was we got to hold on and figure out and scratch and claw just to be like barely under 500 type of thing, where I think if that's your message all year to a team, at this point of the season, it's like, well, what's the freaking point? You know, whereas the situation now with the talent, with the infusion of talent and the surrounding circumstances, there's a certain amount of like, if we can sort of like, this isn't something that exists all the time in the NBA, this dynamic that I'm talking about.
And you're right.
It's and like, and they barely know each other. Almost every team at this point of the season has a level of continuity that we do not. But that, to me, infuses today with the level of urgency as well of like, hey, we have this opportunity, but I don't entirely know where you like the ball or when you're going to slip off of a screen or like all of the things that come with just playing with the same guys for a little bit. That to me, Mike, is the thing that makes this unique in a way where it's like, and if you ball out and if we make a run, Mike, the fans are going to go crazy. In fact, I wanted to bring this up before we close out for the weekend. If you're listening to the pod and you have a chance to go to a game, get your ass to a game. The swell in the arena lately, and you can speak to this better than anybody, Mike, has been awesome. And I just feel it's the tip of the iceberg. And everybody has a part in this, including the fans. So get to a game if you can and cheer your ass off. And, you know, with the defense chance, lose your mind when D'Lo hits a pull up three in transition and the other team calls a timeout, things like that. But that to me, Mike, is just bubbling right under the surface in a way where it's like, if we can wrangle it, it's there. And that opportunity is not always there.
No, you're right. And it is manageable. And I would kind of one-offing, I'm taking the Orlando specific game outside of what I think the rest of the games, it's going to be a little bit more obvious and a little bit easier to create the circumstances, right, for that sort of max effort thing. But because I do, this is me thinking if the Lakers play the right way, they should beat Dallas, and then they're feeling good again, and then they're looking ahead and it's, okay, it's Phoenix, it's OKC, then it's Chicago at home. And then you've got the four-game trip. And urgency sometimes can be a little easier on the road. The whole back-to-back thing is interesting. But then the last two games, home against Phoenix, home against Utah, we'll see if LeBron's ready or not for those games. Like I don't think we're going to have this energy discussion too often. Like, I think it's going to take care of itself for the most part. I'm still feeling like, given the current state and given how it's a couple weeks away and there's like a trip coming up in Orlando and they're young and you look at their record and that's a game that I'm trying to isolate as a bit of a trap game. But I hope that that's wrong. And I hope that the coaches kind of can really get them focused in that one. And I agree with your point about the home crowd has been terrific lately. And you can tell, Riggs clearly agrees as well. Like, you can tell that there's been this just kind of new belief and new hope since the roster changed over, even through LeBron's injury. And I think that partly is helped by the fact that it seems like he's going to have a chance to return. I think a season-ending injury would have been tougher mentally to get over in that sense. But yeah, man, here's the last thing I'll say about the Laker crowd. And I learned this when I came from Minnesota, and you know that I love Minnesota, but it's just not the same in terms of how the fans know what a big moment is and sort of when to cheer and how could it be when you have a Laker fan base that has seen every possible big playoff moment. So Laker fans, they cheer when the team needs a lift, and a lot of fan bases, they get quiet in those moments because they're nervous and they don't know what to do.
Nervous.
And that makes a big difference. It makes a big difference. It's like, if you know, like, because players feed off that also, and that's when runs happen. And I've seen it work in the inverse in some road arenas when the Lakers have been in there. And that doesn't happen at former Staples Center, current crypto.com arena. Like, they're not going to lose because the crowd is not properly engaged and not properly in it.
Yeah.
They'll lose sometimes on their own volition. But I think that the crowd knows how to meet that moment pretty well at these Laker home games. And that's something that's going to be a nice counterbalance to some of what's inevitable in an NBA season, especially when you've got a bunch of young players and a bunch of new players.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been very cool to see that develop. And I think we're, like I said, just at the tip of the iceberg there. Before we go, wanted to give some parting words to the great Anna Lupine. She was our senior graphic designer with the Lakers. A lot of the graphic design stuff that you've seen from us for the last few years have been her brainchild, and she's brilliant. She's moving on to different pastures. And so, Anna, thanks for everything. You're a legend, and we're going to miss you terribly. We will be back on Monday to talk about the Dallas game and the Orlando game. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points. 14 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.